It is now officially spring, thank goodness. Good morning and welcome to Town Square Sunday. This is a program that highlights individuals and organizations working to make the South Coast a better place to live. I'm Jim Phillips. Thank you for tuning in. New Bedford is a very special place for a number of reasons. We could all, I'm sure, tick off several, but one reason is that during the 19th century, it was home to many people who despised slavery and worked to help escape slaves who arrived in New Bedford to find freedom. These abolitionists lived in New Bedford. They were part of the Underground Railroad. It's been Lee Blake's dream to honor those people by creating a small park at 7th and Spring Streets in New Bedford. After several years of planning, I'm sure some delays caused by COVID and other things, work is about to begin on Abolition Row Park. Lee Blake of the New Bedford Historical Society is with us today to talk about the project. Welcome, Lee. It's good to speak with you again.
Thank you, Jim, for inviting me and helping us amplify our project and explain the importance of this development to the city.
Where did the idea for a park come from? I know you've been very interested. Your headquarters of the Historical Society is where Frederick Douglass lived for a time when he came to New Bedford. So obviously you are very much interested in this part of our history. Where did the idea for a park come from?
Well, about 12 years ago, there were two houses right across the street. There was a rooming house, and then there was also a historic property, the Thornton House. And the Historical Society was purchasing the Thornton House to make it a kind of bookstore, bed and breakfast, something that would be evocative of the neighborhood and time period. But unfortunately, there was a fire. Mm-hmm. And the fire was in the single-room occupancy building. And because of that, both of those houses disappeared. They were on fire, had to be torn down, and then, of course, what were we left with but a big lot. And unfortunately, in New Bedford, just like any place else, people see lots and they throw their garbage there. So here we had, the Historical Society had, the Nathan and Polly Johnson House, one of the most important houses in the city, the Friends Meeting House across the street, which is another important historic site, and two other sites, all of which are on the National Register of Historic Places, facing an empty lot owned by a slum landlord who didn't cut the grass, who left it a mess, and people dropping their garbage there.
Mm. So, go ahead and continue.
We said, we got to do something with this, and because we had done so much research on the neighborhood, we knew that 7th Street had 19 historic homes, all in good shape, all with historic plaques on it, and that the neighborhood was really well known for its anti-slavery activists. So why not have a park that celebrates that? And that's how that came about.
So how many abolitionists lived on 7th Street during the 1800s? 19 families? Or
At least 19 families, if not more. And that's just 7th Street. That's not 6th Street. That's not Bedford Street. So when I say that, what you find is when you really do the research, up and down School Street, for instance, there are a lot of single women who had little schools, and the schools were integrated. So the schools allowed black and white girls to be educated, to learn domestic trades. They were all part of the abolitionist movement, too.
Mm. So who were these people on 7th Street? What did they do when they weren't helping escape slaves?
They were individual business people. So, for instance, if I could take the Thornton House that would have been part of the Historical Society's campus idea, the Thorntons were pharmacists. So they were actually working in the pharmacy industry at the time, and we knew that in the basement of the Thornton House that Alyssa Thornton, the owner, was teaching African-Americans the the drug trade, how to be druggists, how to be pharmacists. So while they were also working with people who were freedom seekers, they had their own business. So you had people like the Richardsons, who were business owners, who owned some of the whaling ships, who owned the candle-making ships, businesses. They would hire people of color, freedom seekers, and also free African-Americans to work in their shops. And then they would also support the anti-slavery movement by being subscribers to the Liberation newspaper or to support fugitives as they came into the city. When somebody who ran away from the South came to New Bedford, they didn't have any money. So how were they supported? They were supported by the opportunities that New Bedford developed for the poor, poor houses, poor relief. But they were also supported by the black churches in New Bedford, by the Quakers in New Bedford, who had little pockets of money that they would support people for. Mm-hmm. There are wonderful stories of people coming to New Bedford, usually men coming to New Bedford, who wanted an opportunity to help purchase their families out of slavery. So while they were able to run away and come to a free community, they would meet with the black church members in New Bedford. The black church members would kind of research their stories and realize that they had a wife and three children in North Carolina, and the white community here, white lawyers, would be able to track down and find out if there were opportunities to buy these people out of slavery. And then funds would be put together by the black and white community in New Bedford to do those things.
Wow.
So there are fabulous stories about that. And the other thing is that the stories also exhibit how the black community and the white community in New Bedford work together. Because New Bedford had a very vigorous, vibrant, free African-American community. We were organizing, we were working in the anti-slavery movement, but there are certain areas that we, at that time, black people could not get to, and that would be some of the legal paperwork that white Southerners had.
Mm-hmm.
So the white lawyers in New Bedford could get that paperwork.
New Bedford was a key stop on the Underground Railroad. I think we've all been taught that somewhere in our history. Were there always people coming through? Was it during that time I'm talking? Was there always people coming through looking for help?
Well, there was always people coming through to New Bedford because New Bedford had, of course, the whaling industry becomes an economic engine for the city, but it's also an opportunity for black men to get on sailing ships, whaling ships. And also, New Bedford had not just the whaling industry, but what was called the coastal trading industry, which is ships going from Maine all the way south, carrying goods, whether it's apples and tar and wood. But there's always the need for individuals to work the ships. And then you had also the additional businesses that supported ship, like sailmaking, like candle making, like the food industry that supported the ships as they were going on their either their short-term journey up and down the coast or their long-term journey to different ports, whether it's the Pacific or Alaska. So you had this whole group of people who are the economic engines to make sure that the sailing and maritime trades, as well as the whaling trades, were able to work. And that was often people of color, Native Americans, Cape Verdeans when they come over around the 1850s, mm-hmm. and, of course, the African Americans.
You're listening to Town Square Sunday. My guest is Lee Blake of the New Bedford Historical Society and a key mover behind the Abolition Row Park planned for 7th and Spring Streets in New Bedford. What's the total cost of the project, Lee? And tell us about some of your major funding partners.
Well, first I'd like to say that the Abolition Row Park project is a private-public partnership. between the City of New Bedford, the City of New Bedford Parks Department, the New Bedford Historical Society, and also the National Park Service. And collectively, we did the history necessary. Over the years, we've done the history for that.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also put together the plans and everything for the park. We've been able to raise quite a bit of grant money. So, you know, I'm a very good grant writer and researcher. So we've been able to research places that were giving money to urban parks, to green spaces, what's called creative placemaking money, which is for the last 8 to 10 years has been a big area for funding. We've gotten funds from the Community Preservation Act out of the City of New Bedford.
That was just this week, I think.
Just this week. And on the state level, there's money for environmental parks, green parks out of the state. So we've gotten funds from there. We've received money from Bristol County Savings, the National Park I mentioned, also the Crapo Foundation and the DeMuth Foundation. The other place that we got our first grant was from the U.S. Conference of Mayors. So that was national money. And we were identified as the top project out of the National Conference of Mayors because we were not just a green park, but a park focused on a particular area in the United States of social justice. And the Underground Railroad and the abolitionist movement and the anti-slavery movement, it's really considered as the first human rights movement in the country and social justice. So our first grant was $15,000 in cash, but then each year they give us a certain amount of gardening material, another $5,000. They give us mulch. They give us all kinds of plants, which we put in the Johnson House.
What will make this park special in your eyes? I saw the design, the renderings, if you will, and it's a very elegant-looking park. I mean, it's wonderful. But what makes it special for you?
Well, what makes it special for me is that, first of all, it will create a whole different historical campus in that neighborhood. So instead of an empty lot, you'll have a park that focuses on the history of New Bedford that really is undertold. You know, people say, well, you know, we were an Underground Railroad site. Well, this will tell you much more about who the people were that worked and made sure that New Bedford was well known as an Underground Railroad site and also as a site for the anti-slavery cause. And there were quite a few people. So being able to tell the story of the African Americans who organized, who raised money, who many of them who were men and women who raised money and then helped other people either buy their family's freedom or supported fugitive slaves while they were here. So it's the stories that make it very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the stories of the Underground Railroad in New Bedford. It has really not been told very well, but that is our job. That is the job of the members of the Historical Society. And the Historical Society will be 25 years old this year.
Congratulations.
So for 25 years, we have been fighting and holding people's feet to the fire to tell some of the other important stories of New Bedford and the important stories of all of the ethnic groups in New Bedford, not just the white whaling masters.
Mm-hmm. You've had some key partners in making this park soon to be a reality. And I'm not talking about financial partners necessarily. I'm talking about people who've helped you along the way. I know that Ann Laura was involved, for instance, for a while. Who are some of the people that have worked with you?
So initially, when we came up with this idea, you know, I met with Pat Sullivan, the Community Development Office.
Mm-hmm.
We had great conversations. He helped me shape the idea. So certainly Pat, Mary Raposa has been just a dream to work with, and she is the director of the Parks Department, and Ann Lauro is the preservation planner. So I've worked with the city because we wanted to make sure that it was part of the city's plan as the city's moving forward to develop the downtown area. We wanted to develop kind of the upper area of the downtown, and people really are working together to create a more conducive space, looking at the Seaport Cultural District. The Johnson House, initially, when the Seaport Cultural District came up, the Johnson House wasn't even in that district. So we had to fight to get in the district, and once we did, we were able to get the parkland into the Seaport District.
Sure.
So it's meeting with all of these people, also meeting with the Historic Commission, meeting with the National Park, and all getting them all on board is a way to put it. And also working with our community partners.
Sure.
So like the old Bedford Village with Buddy Andre. Buddy, every summer, Buddy has a crew of young men that come to the Abolition Row Park site. They clean it up. They cut the grass. All summer long, they would do that for us. So there, you know, we have community partners. We have government partners. We have state partners, all of whom have helped us move this project forward.
And, of course, we want to mention the park is located right in front of the Nathan and Polly Johnson House, which is the headquarters of the New Bedford Historical Society. It's also where Frederick Douglass stayed shortly after he escaped slavery and arrived in New Bedford. There will be a, I don't want to say a statue, but there will be some sort of, is it a statue or is it a bronze casting, or what is it, honoring Douglass?
Let me just say just a few things about the park in general.
Okay.
So the park will be a landscape park with cherry trees around it and low-maintenance plantings. It's going to have a gazebo for spoken word, for concert. It'll have a small plaza with the names of the abolitionists and freedom seekers. The other thing is that it will actually have a statue of Frederick Douglass, and it will be a bronze statue. We did focus groups with community leaders and also the general public on what kind of statue they wanted to see. And they wanted a statue that would focus on Frederick Douglass when he first comes to New Bedford. So that would be a statue of him at 20. 21, when he was young, when he first started to work on the docks in New Bedford. So we're looking forward to that. And I would say in a month we may have a small, what's called a marquette, and an image of what that will look like.
My guest has been Lee Blake of the New Bedford Historical Society. She has worked very hard to educate us all about Frederick Douglass and the abolitionist movement in New Bedford. And she had this idea to honor that movement, and now work on the Abolition Row Park at 7th and Spring Street is about to begin. Lee, thank you very much for all your work and for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Town Square Sunday returns in just a moment.